Hello and welcome everyone to this month's Living with Parkinson's Meetup. I'm Chris Krueger, Program Manager for the Educational Content at the Davis Finney Foundation. And I was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2020. And I guess I had symptoms, I can say. I lost my sense of smell in 2014. So it's been a while before that that I had symptoms of Parkinson's. I'm really excited to be here today. And I'll tell you more about why I'm excited in a little bit. So that being said, I'd just like to ask the panelists to give a quick introduction just to where they are, what their story is, and I don't have an opening question today, but maybe just give us a sense of how you've been doing these past couple of weeks and how things are going generally. And why don't we just start with Kat?
Hi, all. Happy October. This is my favorite time of the year. I'm calling in or logging on from Estacada, Oregon. And I've had a good couple of weeks. I've been traveling a little bit and seeing family and went to a family wedding. But I'm happy to be back in the Northwest. And I was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2015, and I was in my 40s. I'm now not in my 40s. Anyway, it's nice to see everybody.
And Doug, how about you go next?
Hi, everyone. I'm Doug Reed, zooming in from Lafayette, Colorado, right outside of Boulder. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2010 when I was 36. I had DPS almost 5 years ago, and it was life-changing for me. I'm doing a lot better. And the past couple of weeks have been kind of up and down for me. I have to have another surgery to fix a hammer toe, which is coming up next Friday. But hopefully it will be my last surgery for a while.
Yeah, I hope so too, Doug. You've had a hard run of form with that with surgeries lately. I hope you're done with it for a while after this one.
Yeah, it'll be 7 in the past 2 years.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's so hard, and I feel for you. Brian, you're up. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. I'm in Southern California right now visiting John and Edna Ball, who, if you've heard of John, he's the king of the proof that the more we move, the better we live. He's had Parkinson's since he was in his 30s. He just turned 80, and he stopped running marathons just 2 years ago. He ran over 25 of them. So anyway, I'm visiting he and Edna, and I'm originally Carson City, Nevada. And I've had Parkinson's for 14 years now. And that was my service dog, Charlie.
Good old Charlie. I love it when Charlie makes an appearance on our calls. Karen, where are you at? How are you doing?
Hi, I'm very good. I want to know why your service dog can't read, Brian. My non-service dog can read. I live in St. Louis.
My first name.
Can read. Mine speaks sign language. Yeah, no. I am in St. Louis, Missouri. I am doing well. I'm really happy to be here with this group and with our community. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's when I was 47. I'm like Kat, no longer 47. No, I was diagnosed in 2018, I believe. I'm doing well. I just gave grand rounds at the Department of Neurology at WashU about the Davis Finney Foundation right before this. So it was a good experience. And the doctors are learning about patients more. So that's important.
Yeah, very important. Mm-hmm. Christy, you're up.
Hi, I'm Christy Malanka. I live in Troy, New York. I'm originally from Connecticut. I was diagnosed when I was 40 with Parkinson's. I've had symptoms since probably 2005. That's when my REM sleep disorder began. And then I had motor symptoms since 2013. And they also kind of came to a head when I had multiple ones. And then, so as with many people, it took a long while before I was diagnosed. As a female and young, you know, you're too young for Parkinson's. You're too young. You're not the right sex. So it took a while. And now here I am, diagnosed, finally. And I had DBS in May. And so I'm still waiting for the life-changing effects, because I know what's going to happen.
When's your next programming appointment?
November.
Coming up soon enough. Well, maybe not soon enough, but it's coming up.
Right.
Thanks, Christy. Shan, how about you let us know how you're doing, where you're calling in from today?
I am getting over a two, oh, pause for dramatic effect. I am getting over a 2 week long sickness that was brought home by my 3-year-old who just started pre-K. So I'm going to try to maintain my voice. I'm feeling great compared to how I have been, but I am struggling a little bit there. I'm Shan. I was diagnosed early last year when I was 36, and I am in Idaho Falls, Idaho.
Thanks, Shan. Glad you're feeling a little better. And Larry, nice to see you. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Hi, everybody. Good to see you all. I'm Larry Linton. I live in Toronto, and I've been living with Parkinson's disease for about 12 years. It was my birthday yesterday, so I'm turned 61. So thank you.
Happy
And
birthday.
thank you. Thank you very much. Living well with it. I'm happy to share some of my milestones from my 60th to my 61st birthday. But good to see everybody.
So I want to just also say that I'm really glad Larry survived, because if anybody watched our Live Well Today webinar yesterday, I did end up singing Larry happy birthday yesterday, and he survived it. So that's the I'm really pleased that that worked out for him. It wasn't a guarantee. Amber, how you doing?
Good. Had a hectic morning and was having issues, technical difficulties, so I was running late, which I hate. But I'm Amber. I was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2018 when I was 35. I got DBS in 2020, like peak COVID. And I am in El Paso, Texas. I think I covered all the.
Nailed it.
And happy birthday, Larry.
So I want to add one little member of the team here. Sia, my colleague Sia, is in the chat, and he'll be there to help you. If you have any technical issues, feel free to throw them in the chat, and Sia can help you try to solve them. And he'll be sending some links out as we talk today. So thanks for being here, Sia, for helping us out. So I had a busy morning too, and I said at the start that there was some exciting news that I wanted to share. And I think maybe some of you might have heard it already, but there's a couple pieces of news that came out today. The first is maybe a little bit of a bummer. The exenatide phase 3 results, and I think Sia has a link to the notice that Cure Parkinson sent out about this that he can put in the chat. The exenatide phase 3 trial results were not fully announced, but the top line was announced yesterday. And that trial did not meet its endpoint. So for those of you that have been tracking that, the progress of those GLP-1R agonists for Parkinson's, this trial failed to show neuroprotection for Parkinson's. So that's a piece of news that's noteworthy, and personally a bummer for me, because I was in one of the trials for a GLP-1R agonist, and I do think it had some impact on my experience of Parkinson's early in my time. But and in any case, I'm glad to know that the results are out and that we have more insight coming. The full results for that will be released in a journal article sometime soon. Yeah, Kat.
And I'd love to just comment on how important it is. It's discouraging to hear that something isn't working, but it's still encouraging and moves us further down the journey of research. And those of you that follow it closely know that, we get invested and we all want the thing that's going to fix it and cure it. But the more we learn what doesn't work, the more we're going to learn what works. And so this is a can be discouraging, but try not to be discouraged because we are learning every day. We're still invested. Cure Parkinson's Trust is going to move forward. They're going to keep working. They're going to work on the next thing. So I don't mean to be Pollyanna about it, but having raised a kiddo with a chronic illness, we get invested, and I think we have to remember it's a journey, and we're in it for the long haul. So on that note, I'm going
And
to
scientists have something as a
let.
scientist. If it was all worked all the time, it would be called search, not research. It doesn't science hurt is hard. Science really doesn't work very often. So it's really, really hard. So that any piece that we find out is better than nothing.
Right.
Yeah, that's totally true. You know, I mean, even the negative result, negative in the sense that it didn't show what we would most hope it to, is not a negative result for the advancement of our understanding of Parkinson's.
Yeah.
But I would also note, I feel like I'd be remiss, and see if you can throw the links in the chat to the recent videos we produced with Alberto Espe, that would maybe be useful here. I think, you know, there are some other perspectives about this, that maybe this medication may actually show some signs of benefit for certain groups of people. And the reason it didn't show it in the whole group of people is that there may not be the people who would most respond. It could be the case that the people in the study may not have been the people who'd be best suited to benefit from this treatment, and that there could be subtypes of Parkinson's that we don't understand yet. I think there are many researchers and clinicians who believe that. And I think that most of the people on this call would probably agree that our experiences of Parkinson's are pretty distinct from each other, even though there are some common threads. And I don't think that's pretty common knowledge about Parkinson's among the people that live with it. So the other news that I think we probably should talk about is much more positive. In fact, it's extremely positive in my opinion. And that's that this morning, the press, AbbVie, the pharmaceutical company as AbbVie, released that the FDA has approved a continuous infusion levodopa system for Parkinson's. It's formally approved for treatment of motor fluctuations in advanced Parkinson's. And, you know, this is great news for many reasons. And I think, you know, among them, it will help with people who struggle with doses either wearing off or not hitting very well because of diet issues or constipation issues. It'll help with people who have swallowing challenges, so it's difficult for them to take an oral carbidopa levodopa. And there's many other reasons too why it might be useful. You know, for me, I won't have to think about if I take it. I might not have to think about whether I can go for my exercise because is my dose going to hit at the right time? It may help me with that. There's a lot unknown about this, but I just think we should talk about it a little bit. So I'm just curious what the panelists think about this. Anybody have a perspective about this development of continuous infusion levodopa being approved?
This is fantastic news.
I was on a DBS support group Zoom meeting two nights ago with some Canadians, and they had a guest presenter, a lady from Calgary, who had been in the AbbVie trial for the US, and she was doing phenomenally. Everyone that I've met who's been involved in the trial is doing really, really well. Less dyskinesia. One thing I didn't realize, though, is that you can control the flow rate of the dose with the pump. And so there is a learning curve, if you will, of getting your dosage correct and figuring out when to increase the flow rate if you're exercising, for example. But it's a fantastic breakthrough.
Yeah, Karen, go ahead.
I think it's a game changer in the long run. I think right now it's going to be used for more advanced people, but insurance companies obviously are eventually going to approve it for broader use, I believe. And I think, you know, we don't have a lot of, it's not a new drug per se, because it's still levodopa, but delivering it in this way is huge. It's sort of like diabetes being managed with a insulin pump. It's just completely different, not having those peaks and troughs and having a more steady state. I think that makes a big difference for all of us. I think it could be a bridge to surgery down the road for a lot of people. So I have a lot of hope in it. And being formerly a nurse anesthetist, and I understand a fair amount about pharmacology, I think it's a big deal.
So I want to just add a quick note, because some people may want to read a little bit about this. One of the reasons I was busy, like Amber described being busy when she introduced herself today, I was gathering a lot of information, and I produced a blog post about this topic that Sia just put in the chat now. So if you wanted to read about this, you know, forgive me. I bet you there you'll find a typo. If you find a typo, I'll give you a prize next time I see you. But I bet you there is one in there somewhere. I wanted to make sure that I provided some resources to everybody that so you could read about this if you found that helpful. So check out that blog post. And Kat, please let us know what you think.
Yeah. So for those of you that haven't heard about it, I think I'd like to take just a second. Is everybody okay with that, to explain what it is? So there is a form of carbidopa that can be infused subcutaneously, and it's administered through a continuous infusion in a small pump. It looks like a pager. It's usually worn on a belt loop. It's very, very similar to a continuous infusion of insulin that type 1 diabetics can use to manage their blood sugar. I happen to know a lot about that because I raised a child with type 1 diabetes who used an insulin pump for many years. And typically, the settings on these pumps allow you to infuse a basal rate, so kind of a continuous rate, and you can get an infusion every like 15 minutes. A small amount is kept going in the system. And then you can add boluses. For insulin, it matters when you eat, but for folks with Parkinson's, it may mean that you add more when you're going to exercise. Maybe you use a little less when you're sleeping. Maybe you need a little more when you're sleeping. When is your dystonia happening? So I think we're going to be learning a lot more about it. It does mean that you wear a device, and it's a small plastic catheter that's inserted subcutaneously. And that has to be changed out usually like every 3 days. So there's a learning curve. We're going to be learning more about it, but I agree. I think it's going to be a game changer. And I was really honored to be part of a focus group several years ago talking about whether this is something that we think we might use. And I think it's really exciting because the technology and the delivery system already exists. We're just adapting it and adapting the medicine for how we're going to live with Parkinson's. So, anyway, that's my quick summary. I hope that answers some questions.
That helps a lot.
So another thing to say about that that relates to what you just said, Kat, is that this is a particularly cool couple of months with regard to Parkinson's treatments, because there's also the recent development of the or approval of a new form of Rytary. That's not the right way to say this, but it's a new extended release formulation from Amneal called Crexont that adds another tool to the toolbox. And that these things could potentially be used in tandem and provide some interesting opportunities if you wanted to, if you didn't like to wear it when you slept, the continuous device, maybe you take an extended release to help you sleep. Anyway, there's a lot of opportunities here that may be interesting, and there's so many new treatments coming out that can or that are in the pipeline, and two that just came out. And so good news on that front. And I'd like anybody else that has something to add to this, so please go ahead and do so.
I
I
think
think.
it creates a dilemma now for at least young onset people if they want the subcutaneous pump or if they want DBS. I don't know what I would have done if 5 years ago when I decided to get DBS, if the subcutaneous pump had been available, I may have gone that route.
There's no reason why we can't use it both together.
True.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I was thinking when we were in Spain last year and they were talking a lot about the watches coming out that'll monitor our symptoms, I was thinking this pump and that watch would be like a great set of tools for our MDSs to have because they'll get much more information than we can share with them anecdotally.
And that's what's happening with diabetes management now with these continuous glucose monitors that are super tiny. Our son had one of the old ones because he had some complications with seizures, and they were massive. They were like carrying around a laptop almost. And now they're super tiny. So over time, there's ways that those electronically give each other some feedback, and it doesn't always involve having to test blood sugar on fingers. So I think that it is exciting. I think it can be a game changer. It's adding another tool, like what Doug was asking, to our toolbox. The more tools that we have available, the more we can customize our care to our needs and what our symptoms are. And I think it's never going to hurt us to have more choices. So,
Exactly.
On that note, I wanted to add too that I had an opportunity this morning to talk with some people from AbbVie, and I think that this may be accessible in some of the journal articles, but I asked them because I couldn't find it easily what the size of the device was, so I can give you an estimate of what the size is. It's not a big, it's not like a Bible on your hip, right? It's a little bit, it's fairly small. I believe they said it's like 6.5 3 by 3, and it's like 1.2 inches deep or something like that. So it's not very thick, and it's kind of like two cell phones stacked together, maybe. So it's fairly small. Yeah, it's about like that, maybe a little thicker than that. But so it's not tiny, but it's not gigantic either.
But does it have polka dots?
I hope so. I suspect there'll be some bag options, maybe like a way to cover it or something. I don't know, but let's call AbbVie. Can we add somebody from AbbVie to this call right now?
I know Sawyer wore his in like a fanny pack. So he wore his, you know, his glucose sensor in his pack with him. So, you know.
So one other thing I think we should talk about is, you know, Doug raised an interesting question. What would Doug have done? And Doug's saying, oh, I'm not sure what I would have done. It's a hard question. I don't know what I would do either if I had to make a choice between those two. But one thing to think about here is that just because this is available doesn't mean that it's something you need to pursue. If you're doing okay with your current treatment, it's not unreasonable to stay with that. And also, it's worth noting that every medication, when it comes out, there's a likelihood of adverse events coming up that maybe didn't appear in the trials that do appear once a ton more people start taking them. The trials are fairly small, only a couple hundred people. So, you know, there's a possibility that some side effects come up. So I just wonder what the panelists think about caution.
I think that there's kind of an undertone that is the same for all of the topics we've talked about so far, which is that every one of us is so unique that I think it would depend on my circumstances. I had this conversation recently with BBS versus focused ultrasound. That's gaining a lot of traction, right? But I think depending on who you are and what your situation is and what your symptoms are, one of those might not just magically be a better option. So I think for me personally, it's something you'd have to weigh really carefully with, where am I? Is what I'm doing working? There's the whole medication effectiveness window with BBS considerations. So how long have you already been waiting? How well does the medication work when you're on? You know, there's so many factors that I think it's a good time to remind everyone that this is one of those things where the underlying theme of all of this is that adage that we keep saying, that whole, you know, if you've met one person with Parkinson's, you've met one person with Parkinson's. That's just the truth. I think it depends heavily on your unique circumstances.
Yeah.
And I hate to chime in, and I'm gonna be quiet, I promise. But I love to encourage people to think about before they're jumping into something, thinking about what are the benefits to me. What are the alternatives, right? So we just now we came up with, you know, a pump, oral medicine, focused ultrasound, DBS. And then what are the risks, the benefits, the alternatives, and the risks? And I think part of it for me, part of why I'm excited is I know the technology because I have used it with our son, and it's a subcutaneous, it's not completely external, right? But it's small and it goes, it can go in the belly usually, or in the arm or in the leg, but it's not inside my brain. And so for me, those risks feel maybe a little bit less scary to start with. And maybe there's a progression of what I would try next then. Everybody's different though. And I think something else that we need to remember is it's going to take time. Yes, it was approved, but it doesn't necessarily mean that tomorrow we can make an appointment and go get it from our providers. So I think that there's going to be this rollout. But I think it's smart to start thinking about those things, because with any luck, we're going to have 4 or 5 more options here soon.
Well, yeah. And to add on to that, Kat, I go to a big university practice for my movement disorder doctor. And the way they kind of do things, first of all, I mean, if it's approved, it takes a while to roll onto shelves because insurance companies aren't instantly going to be paying for this drug. So that may take some time. And then I know at my practice, they kind of watch and wait and see. They're not the first to jump on the bandwagon with everything. They might for their more severe patients, but that could take a year to orient their practitioners and start their clinic and get that going. But also a comment on, you were asking Chris about what we feel about things being right for us or not. I have some concerns personally. I'm allergic to a lot of adhesives. And, you know, I wonder, 20% of people that were in the trial had skin site reactions that could eventually lead to serious inflammation, like cellulitis or sort of inflammation infection of the skin. And, you know, I think it depends how mobile you are, how able you are to put the patch on, how able you are to monitor the site and rotate it. And do you have the resources to use clean materials and that kind of thing? Not everybody has the same abilities and resources or partnership for that matter. If you live alone, for example, I know I can't use even surgical glue or a lot of patches, band-aids. So I wonder, I get kind of anxious, like, oh, am I not going to be able to have this wonderful, awesome thing that everybody's talking about? But it goes to each person's uniqueness, I think.
Indeed.
I'm actually completely with Karen on that. Since I live alone and I would have to basically rely on teenagers to help me out with, like, changing out a catheter or patch, like, that's just something that already made me internally panic. As we're DBS, the doctor did it and I'm done and go in for programming, but there's not a lot I have to do on my end as far as like maintenance of it.
Amber, I want you to breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth.
It doesn't take much to make me internally panic, by the way. So.
But I don't want to leave you worse than I found you, my friend.
You can never, Kat.
Yeah. I think that the capture is, what would Doug do is something we should all ask ourselves, right? Yeah. What would Doug do? And then don't let Kat scare you. I think
it's another thing. I think that's where I was coming from. I don't think that any of us, like, need our own unique medication, right? Like, we need to make a medicine for everyone. It's more just exactly the circumstances, not only your symptoms and how they present, but also what your life circumstances are and what is actually right for you specifically.
Yeah, that's right. What I wanted to say is that, you know, this is a great discussion and we each showing that we're in control to a large extent about the decisions we're making, about the quality of life that we can lead. And I think this just gives us another tool, as has been said before, in our arsenal to enjoy and to use and utilize in our quality of life, to extend that as long as possible. I wouldn't want to give up my exercise regime because I know that it works. But if I could add on and maybe, you know, get an extra hour's sleep because I don't have to get onto my bike, I would do that too. But it's all about us being in control. And I think that's exciting. To be able to do.
Well, and we've had the pump delivery system to the stomach for a while. Do you remember what that one is? Anybody?
Duopa.
Yeah.
Duopa,
so
yeah.
That's in the similar league, isn't it? Or is this completely
more
different?
More invasive, I think, than a. It's also even happy. It's more invasive.
Correct. It's a surgical. Duopa takes a surgery to implant into, I don't remember, small or large intestine. And this is a subcutaneous, but it would take training. And I think Amber makes a great point that you have to be comfortable with the idea of kind of using a needle and how to change things out and even getting that whole system up and running for a clinic, like Karen said, would be difficult and it's going to take some time. It doesn't mean it's not doable and it might not be an option, but it may not be an option for everybody, for sure. Yeah.
You know, we just got a great question into the chat that came only to the hosts and panelists. And This is what the person asked. They said, do you think this might help with the anxiety, the pump that is? The person writes that they become anxious when they are low on their carbidopa levodopa and they know that it's almost time for their next dose. So, you know, it does seem like that's a useful feature of this for me.
Never go low, yeah.
And if I know for me too, part of what makes me anxious is that I'm going to forget it, right? So I think of it, but I don't want my watch to be the boss of me. We've already talked about that. My technology doesn't rule my life, but in that I have to be accountable to myself. And it might indeed, if I could program in my doses in my pump, you know, one time and then tweak it and not have to think about it, that might indeed help anxiety. I mean, I'd love to think that at least. So that might be an advantage.
Well, I think there's the subjective experience of anxiety, of I feel anxious, then an objective, meaning it's a true thing called wearing off anxiety as our levels fluctuate. Indeed. And perhaps Excellent. Having a more steady state of the drug, you won't have as many fluctuations in on off, presumably. But I would be curious to see what patients' experiences are like with that.
Yeah, Karen, good point. It depends on where the anxiety is coming from, right? Is it endogenous or exogenous? Yeah. Interesting. I feel kind of excited and a little more hopeful today than I did yesterday. I don't know about all y'all. We just heard about it literally before we went on the air. Karen heard about it though at her presentation. So this may be the place you hear it first, people.
What's that news sound? Do, 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 do.
I know.
Wait, no, that's a Halloween soundtrack, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Yes. It matches my earrings.
Very good.
My bat and ghost earrings.
The question I wanted to ask the panelists is, or the topic I'd like to bring up and see what the panelists think about anyway, is as I said, this new formulation is approved to treat motor fluctuations in advanced Parkinson's, but there isn't really a consensus definition of what advanced Parkinson's means. And so related to this anxiety question, I just wonder, how do you feel about that? When if you think, oh, I have to do something for advanced Parkinson's, what does that mean to you? Is that hard to accept? Should it be? Should it not be? What do you think?
Off the top of my head, I'd say I don't think I'd want to put the thought of advanced Parkinson's into my head. Just handling PD alone is good enough. I don't want to put something on more on it. But and this kind of goes to what Kat talked about earlier, the problem I have is I'm constantly missing my medications because when my alarm rings, I'm usually into something and I'm afraid if I stop, I'm going to forget and I won't get it done. And it's too important, I think, at that moment. And next thing I know, I've gone through the 5 reminders and I've missed the dose. So the idea of this is much more exciting to me in that sense, if that answers your questions.
I think for me, I hate the idea of someone being excluded who would benefit because they're not considered advanced by someone else's fairly subjective opinion. So that's maybe the more uncomfortable part for me. I don't really care what the doctor calls my Parkinson's, but I more care about that people would be excluded when they could use it. And I mean, get a bunch of people with apathy and put them in charge of taking medications a million times a day and expect them to not have fluctuations. Like, it's just, it's kind of unfair. And so if you should benefit, you should be able, if you could benefit, you should be able to use it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the definition of Parkinson's is enough: chronic, progressive, and incurable. I think we're all on this journey, be it start, advanced. I think we don't have to use the word advanced, and I think we experience it differently.
I like wiser Parkinson. I don't know. I also, it's sort of like I don't want to be put in a box, and I think that if we put ourselves in a box, we start living in a box. And we start boxing ourselves in. And I think that's right. that's dangerous on any level, I think. So I like choice, and I like trying hard to get up and make the best choices for me in that day, regardless of how many years I've had Parkinson's or had symptoms or however long, you know, my wrinkles and deep my wrinkles are, or how many new gray hairs I have, right? So it's a challenge that we live with, and I think more tools are helpful. But I agree with Shan also that I would hate to have it be exclusionary. My hope would be for it that we learn more about it, we let it roll out, we see what happens, how we do with adhesives, because I think that's a real issue, Karen. I think how people with Parkinson's mechanically do trying to use the tools, and we learn from it. And I pray that we have a world that will continue to do that, you know?
I think we also have to consider this definition of advanced Parkinson's might be an insurance call. Who's going to foot the bill for this very expensive drug? And I think to allow everybody to have it is impractical financially. I don't like that. I agree with all of you, what you say, how you perceive yourself or think about yourself with Parkinson's. I know I had a lot of nausea and vomiting. I would have enjoyed having access to a drug that was delivered not through my GI tract at all. To think that I might be denied that or have to prove to an insurance company that I'm worthy of that medication gives me anxiety in and of itself. But this, we deal with this with all kinds of medications, even Rytary, for example, certain you have to prove you need it. I don't like that, but it's a true reality of the system we live in.
Well, in the end, in the long run, I mean, it's up to our MDS, for those of us who have an MDS, movement disorder specialist, because they're the ones who are going to be most aware of the studies and the science behind it. And they're going to be the best advocates to the insurance companies if there's some balking at it or whatnot. So it's a ride we have to take with them at the steering, at the helm.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe this is where, not to get on a weird soapbox, but this is where I start to struggle with any chronic illness. I've come to realize it's not just Parkinson's, I think it's just chronic illness. But when you have a chronic illness, so much depends on these black and white checkbox prove you need this, but so much of it is so much more nuanced than that. So if anyone knows like who I have to start conversating with to change that, let me know and I'll get on it. But I was just talking to someone the other day, and this applies even to what if we become unable to work, but like you see me on this call and I look fantastic, but really I'm struggling 80% of every day. You can't work a real job struggling 80% of every day and not knowing if you're going to be able to go to work. Yeah. But disability checklists are check, 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 because all insurances, all that, like Karen said, the system is broken. So if anyone knows who I can petition to make the system a little bit more nuanced for chronic illness, you let me know and I'll take up that fight. But that's a hard one. It's a rough part of this.
Yeah. Call my insurance company, please. Because that really makes me angry when I get letters from them saying that someone's approving me for something. Great, that's awesome. Because why is this person who doesn't know me approving me to get this drug? They don't know me.
And you often have to fail on paper other approved therapies before you can get approved. My air quotes are very messy because I've had a lot of Botox.
I had taken Tacrofol before I got a Picofoam.
But right. So anyway, I don't know if anybody can follow me today. I can barely.
I get you 100%. I just had a whole bunch of injections of Botox in my feet. So because it helps with the cramping. So it's not you're trying to make your fingers more sexy. You're trying to handle the cramping.
I always say if this webinar stuff doesn't work out, I'll be a Parkinson's hand model.
I guess to wrap this up, fluctuations and advanced Parkinson's part of this conversation up, and I would say that if I was going to be in this, if my doctor said to me, "You have advanced Parkinson's, so you should try this thing," I read that it was about motor fluctuations. I would try to lean on the motor fluctuations part and say, "This is the experience I'm having, and I don't care what the definition is." And, you know, in the sense of what that means about my status or my stage of Parkinson's, I care about the experience. And that points to the question or the comment that was made in the chat that I'll read it. The person wrote, "I feel that I need to be informed about the advancement of Parkinson's," I assume is what the person meant, "and be in charge of those issues. I've had two friends with Parkinson's that have passed away recently, and it might have been avoided if someone had been more knowledgeable about the issues they were facing." And so I just wanted to acknowledge that it's true. That experience is real. And it's an educational problem that stretches beyond the ability of people with Parkinson's. But I would just note that there are people working on this. There's a trial that is being run by Benzie Kluger out of the University of Rochester called COPE-PD. Which is part of the goal of that trial or that study is to educate community neurologists about palliative care, which is just to say whole person resources for treating people living with Parkinson's and other conditions that are neurologically degenerative. So, you know, people are working on this. And I think the more we talk about it, the more people will know about it. But I think that it has to be a sort of community effort, and it's not just people with Parkinson's that can work on it. So yeah, Kat, go ahead.
And I think, Shan, I love your offer, friend, because our system is broken, and many systems, healthcare systems around the world, aren't working very efficiently right now. We've got provider shortages, we've got nursing shortages, and it's multifactorial, multi-layered. And I think you're absolutely right on that this is not a unique issue to Parkinson's. But I think we need to continue to have conversations. We need to continue to ask for to get our needs met when we go to our providers, whether they're family doctors, whether they're neurologists, whether they're movement disorder specialists. We need to speak loudly and firmly about what our needs are. And if our needs are not getting met, we need to continue to speak loudly and firmly to everybody that will listen. And I think that what happens is we get complacent because it's exhausting to ask for help. And I think it's exhausting for many providers to not have more tools to help us, but it doesn't mean we should stop asking. And I think it's flipping the switch a little bit, saying that we've got to advocate for ourselves. I wish we didn't have to. I wish we lived in a system that was compassionate and reaching out to us, that asked us, "What can we do to help you?" That's not the system we live in. And so speaking up, speaking for those that can't be heard, coming to the webinars, asking the questions for those that went before us, I think it's important. And yeah, that's my soapbox, Jan.
Well, and
don't get me started.
To chime in on that, it also might mean your MDS isn't the right one for you. I've had that happen. I drove 4 hours for the MDS because in Carson City, we don't have any. 4 hours to one, and he had just joined the team, and I saw right away he wasn't going to work. And so I drove an extra half hour further up to San Francisco and got the one I needed. So, you know, you got to be a judge on, is your team kind of following you, and do you need to change it a little bit?
I had a similar experience, but even the best MDS, if we go right back to that, it's so nuanced. Even the best MDS can't know it all. And fortunately, there's a big push right now in in the healthcare, the patient-led healthcare space. It's a lot of organizations coming out with really cool offerings on helping you advocate for yourself and find solutions and work with your doctors, not against them, not to force them, but to work with them in a really meaningful way. And I think you're going to see more solutions coming out for patients and for providers in that space. Lovely.
That's awesome. That's great. Glad you're on top of that.
So we've got about 10 minutes left. Why don't we share some quick little pieces of advice that we've gained from folks in the past? And I'm going to share one piece of advice from our friend Heather, Heather Kennedy, who I asked if she wanted me to share what she would say to this question. And she said, I'm just going to make sure I get this right, because I want to honor what she said. She said, what she's learned from other people is that just like us, everyone is suffering in just like us. That's to say, just like those of us with Parkinson's, everyone is suffering in ways we cannot necessarily easily see. And so, you know, I think it's just about, I think the message there is about kindness, and that's what Heather would have added to this conversation. And on that front, I would note that my piece of advice is something I learned from Heather early. It was the first conversation I ever had with Heather, which was a couple of years ago. And Heather said, you sound like you're doing, she said, basically, you sound like you're doing pretty well, but just be ready for some surprises, because you think you know what might happen, but you're going to be surprised. And well, I'll be damned. She's been right. I've been surprised almost every single day. Okay. And, you know, so, but hearing that from somebody who has more experience was very helpful to me early on. So I'd like to hear whatever other people on the panel have to say is the advice they've received that was made an impact on their life and helped them.
Well, I'll chime in. This may not be a popular one. I heard from a friend that dealing with being off and learning to tolerate those off moments is really important, because we chase this constant wanting to be on all the time and be free of Parkinson's for even a period of time, but we aren't. We aren't, and we never are going to be completely free. So the quality of your life, they said to me, is really directly proportional to being able to tolerate the times when you can't be free of this disease. And that's not so easy to do, but if you live, you know, half your day with symptoms, then you have to make some kind of peace with that, or you're going to be miserable half your day. So, you know, he actually practiced being off, kind of meditating when he's off and doing things to tolerate being off, because it's going to happen. And I mean, I don't know. Is that depressing? Is that helpful? I'm not sure.
That reminds me of something else I learned from somebody. They said, you know what I did? I practiced falling a lot when I was early in my time with Parkinson's, because I figured I'm probably going to fall. And I said, I'll learn. I think what they did was they started doing a keto or something to you know, become accustomed to falling. I don't know that I would recommend anybody do that, but I think it's the same sort of message, which is just to say, become comfortable with the things you're dealing with and try to practice them to be able to manage them better. I like that advice, Karen, personally.
Mine is actually very similar, Karen, and I love it. And it's really just that I need to meet myself where I'm at in any moment. And I, early on after my diagnosis, I watched the most recent Michael J. Fox documentary, and he's like broken a billion bones. And I am like him. I always run. Everywhere I went, people said, oh, I can hear you coming a mile. I can hear you coming, and I know it's you. And so the first thing I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to break every bone in my body if I don't learn to slow down. But then slowing down was so frustrating, because I still wanted to move at a pace I thought I should move at. And being able to just stop and be like, okay, well, there's no should. I just am where I am right in this moment. So let's just live there and be okay with it, versus panicking or wanting it to be different. So that really, like, this is where you are. So just meet yourself there instead of being frustrated about it, has been super impactful for me. And I also have done some practicing of being off in the same way.
I just got some very sage advice at a family wedding that I went to. A 91-year-old man and I were both looking at a staircase going down from the wedding where his granddaughter just got married, my niece. And I looked at John and said, John, what are your thoughts on any sage advice to share with me about making it to 91? And he smiled and he looked up and he said, use the handrails. Now, that's a really practical piece, but it sort of speaks to an awful lot, right? Slowing down, being in the moment, living with your disease, practicing the off moments. And I loved it. And I thought, wow, that's practical. And I sort of needed that, because he and I were meeting up at every handrail throughout the day. And anyway, food for thought.
I practice that when I go bowling. I always use the bumpers.
Me too, Chris.
Ask for bumpers.
Well, I was telling, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was telling Chris that I don't feel like I've been offered advice except for unsolicited medical advice, which I get tons of. But I think one of the things that I've heard that has helped me is Michael J. Fox talking about vanity going out the window. And I think that really helped me cope with the DBS and the scarring and the weight gain and everything that comes along with it. Like, vanity is the least of my concerns. So I feel like that's helped me through a lot.
Yeah, I was riding my bike over the summer, completing 500 kilometer ride. And I had a fear going into the ride on riding on gravel. And I used to slow down. And on this ride, I was riding along. I was lost at the back of the pack. And another teammate was behind me. And she said, "Larry, you're going very slow." I said, "Yes, I got this fear of gravel." She said, "Can I give you some advice?" I said, "Sure." So I'm obviously, she's behind me. So I'm just hearing the voice. Her voice said, "Keep to your lane, go fast, and be confident." And I've kept that thought in my head every day since that, because I'm equating that and internalizing that in my life with Parkinson's. Keep to your lane is that we all experience it, you know, Parkinson's in our own lane, but there's community in numbers. Go fast, well, that was on gravel. And to a certain extent, we are putting our feet in front of each other, and we are going fast. And we talked about it today, the advanced progressive nature of this. But confidence, I think, is also very important. And that is, we've got to be in control of our lives and our destiny to the extent that we can. So I learned that something new, and I've internalized that since that ride.
Yeah, I like that little three piece. It's like there's like a little harmony in those pieces of advice. I like that. And confidence is important for me. I mean, you know, it has to be reasonable confidence, but, you know, and one of the pieces of confidence that you have to have is the confidence to know when you need to slow down.
Right.
And trust yourself when that's true. Any other pieces of advice anybody wants to share? I think, Brian, you had something that you wanted to add. I think you emailed me about it. Oh, if you're speaking, you're muted, Brian.
It was going to go with the other part of our topic, but it was shared to me by Edna Ball. Sorry, having trouble with words. And she was telling me, because I had motility issues and had a lot of problems with constipation and whatnot. And she talked about the squatty potty. And the squatty potty is a thing that when you sit on it, it's like a stool for the toilet. But what it does is it gives you the squat position. And until plumbing came around 100 years ago, everybody squatted when they went to the bathroom. So we were naturally formed that way. So it helps with a lot of issues.
All right. Well, we're approaching the end of the time. If anybody else has anything that they wanted to share as far as advice that they've received, I'd love to hear it. And if not, we'll wrap up. But feel free to chime in if anybody has anything else they want to add.
Exercise, exercise, exercise. Helps with motor symptoms and not motor symptoms.
Mm-hmm. My dad at the dentist would say, "You only floss the teeth you want to keep." And maybe in Parkinson's, only keep moving the muscles you want to keep. And floss.
Well, I think that's delightful advice from the dentist, and we'll end it there. And I'll just say thanks to everybody for joining us. Thank you to the panelists for being here today.